All right, welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Dan Fernandez.
And I'm Brian Torrey.
Brian Torrey. Actually, I should be Daniel Keller, right?
Yeah, you're Dan Keller, not Brian Torrey.
There actually is a Danny Keller.
There is actually a Brian Torrey as well.
There probably is.
Actually, Torrey is not a very common name, so.
Really?
Yeah, we're special, man.
All right, so Charles, we got a lot of stuff on.
You're
back again.
I'm happy to be back.
Yes.
Where is Brian, by the way? What's his excuse this time? He had a baby last time. Now what's going on?
Lazy? I think lazy.
Come on, Brian.
We'll file this under lazy. All yeah, right. Sure. So big news out. Actually, before we even get into the news.
Yes.
Let's talk about our review. People did homework.
They did. Thanks for trying. I saw some people actually spent some time thinking about it. I think we got 10 answers.
And just as a level set for people that didn't see, what was the homework?
The question is, what is a side effect of itself? So you have a function f, right? Does some things. What do functions do? They side effect. I mean, at least in the programming languages that do things.
Sure.
Right? So as one of these side effects, it returns itself, which is actually not easy to do in a language like C#. It's not possible to do in F# either. Anyway, the moral of the story was it was just thinking more of a philosophical way, bringing it into programming. But we also got some interesting answers from Eric Meyer, who actually said energy.
Side effect of itself.
Yeah. That's right. Actually a very excellent answer, Eric. And then there was a couple people on Channel 9 that tried to go the programming route. One guy came up with quine, and a quine is something that returns its implementation to a caller.
Mm.
So it's code. I thought that was an interesting and creative solution as well. And then somebody came up with, I think it was Heaven's Revenge. First of all, he called us ladies. I think you're talking to me and Dan, Heaven? I mean, come on, man. But either he called us ladies, maybe it was the people in the thread he was calling ladies, but it was, you know, I understand he wasn't being serious. His answer was, okay. I give you an okay. But thanks for playing along. It was really just kind of an open-ended philosophical question. I really love the energy answer. And there's not always going to be a code answer to everything.
Sure.
But I'm surprised no one tried to think about, like, JavaScript.
Well, I was going to say Schrodinger's cat.
Interesting.
What is the state of Schrodinger's cat? Side effect of itself. Measuring it actually would affect its state.
Its state?
Yeah.
Itself?
All right.
Thank you for taking the challenge.
Well, so let's jump right into it, because we got a lot of stuff going. And thank you all for doing our first homework challenge on TWC9. And first story, Visual Studio 2013, Update 1 RC, because you, dear listener, have probably just installed Visual Studio 2013. We just did the live event. We are now releasing our first public update, and this is the RC of the public update.
Excellent. So what's in it?
So there's a number of things. So this includes the slipstream of the IE blocking issue. So for example, people that were doing IE10 tried to install and didn't have IE10, it blocked, for example. Mm-hmm. All the IE blocking stuff is now off. In fact, we slipstreamed the regular release as well, so you'll have that.
Mm.
And a number of bug fixes on debugger, C++, tool windows,
sweet,
IntelliTrace, XAML, and so on. So
great.
Again, this is an RC, so not the final release of update one. And this is really about, you know, what are the things that are crashing or bug fixes, right?
Okay.
So stability and bug fixes,
so they
as
learned,
opposed to new features.
Okay, so they learned from the real world usage,
yes,
what needed to be fixed. Feedback on Kinect and also telemetry.
Squim, sure.
Cool.
Crashes, everything. Watson.
Ah, this one was interesting. So
people, our friend Mads Torgerson.
Yeah. Mads Torgerson is pretty much the lead program manager for the C# programming language. He's the guy that writes the spec. And he's like Anders' right-hand man when it comes to designing new features in the language. A lot of people were really curious about what's coming next. Turns out Mads sort of gave people a light preview of what might be coming next.
Yeah, it's sort of like open, like, hey, these are the things that we're looking at.
Yeah.
It's not the things we're necessarily committed, but what do you think? Is this the right kind of things?
Totally. So he, you know, it actually made a lot of excitement. I don't know if Mads intended that to happen, but you can see they're working on some interesting things. Import type members into namespace, succinct syntax for primary constructors, read-only properties,
like
property expressions, which is actually kind of cool. So, you know, building a property out of a lambda. It's kind of interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a little unique. You wouldn't imagine to be able to do something like that, but
method expressions, parameter arrays for innumerable interfaces, succinct null checking. So I assume it's succincter than if does not equal null, or equals null, right?
Yeah.
Explain. Yeah. So anyway, multiple return values, that's quite interesting. Constructor type inference. These are, you know, mild. They're not like earth-shattering features that he discussed, right? These are kind of little.
Right, this isn't like a new link or a new async await.
Exactly.
These are really sort of language light-up features.
Totally. So thanks, Mads, for giving people a little peek into what might be coming.
All right. So next story is actually from Brian Keller.
Ooh.
Heard of him. Visual Studio 2013 RTM ALM, Application Lifecycle Virtual Machines.
Interesting.
So the idea here is, hey, I want to, like, maybe I just want to check out TFS. I want to check out Visual Studio 2013. I want to check out the new Visual Studio Release Management product. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of configuration I need to do. Maybe I'd have to even set up things like my sprint, set up people in my team, add work items, just to see how all of the agile tools would work, mm-hmm. you know, for planning purposes, all of our agile planning. Instead of that, you log in, so machine has a dedicated password. It includes a bunch of labs that you can kind of walk through, like things to go through, and everything's set up for you.
Awesome.
So you go through, you see your TFS, you can kind of play around, hey, here's how it works, here's how I can customize, and so on. So it's a great way to learn about not only our Visual Studio 2013, but also our TFS offering.
Awesome. You know, Brian's done a lot of great work in this area with virtual machines and hands-on labs over the past like 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, so real quick, 4 hands-on labs, agile planning, portfolio management, getting started with Git using TFS, embracing continuous delivery with release management, and new collaboration experiences for development teams using TFS.
Right on.
Lots of stuff. So 2 things actually are looking to get closer to releasing. And these are release candidates for ASP.NET MVC 5.1,
wow.
And Web API 2.1, and Web Page 3.1. So a lot of detail in these, and you know, remember these are sort of in the RC state,
okay.
Release candidate state, and are available in NuGet as well. So you can go and kind of suck them down. And there's a number of things going on here as well. So one of my favorite features when you're using ASP.NET MVC scaffolding, mm-hmm. now if I, for example, have a class and my class is an enum, like, yep. like say the enum is a state lookup, right?
Okay.
Like Alaska to Washington, right?
Okay.
If I change that into a page, it'll scaffold out a page for like the create, read, edit, delete operations for you automatically. That,
wow.
That's built in.
Okay.
The nice part is if it knows the enum, it'll actually do like a drop down of the Alaska 3WA, for example.
Really? So all it does, it gets an enum of this data. Which
you point it to a class. Again, you're assuming
point
this is like a code first.
Okay.
And there's an enum called, you know, state. And then it'll do the nice drop down HTML for you. And,
wow.
you know, sort of that scaffolding approach.
That's
so
awesome.
Yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff in there. Definitely check out the full post in terms of all the improvements, attribute routing, and so on.
Excellent. Aha.
So what are we talking here?
So I'm sure people know by now that RX is now part of MS Open Tech. They basically, MS Open Tech is a group that works with open technologies, both internal and external.
Mm-hmm.
Before Eric Meyer left the company, one of the things he did was he wanted to find a good home for RX, and that good home is MS Open Tech. RxJS 2.2 just came out, and they wanted to talk about that. So there's a blog post. You should read it. If you're a JavaScript developer, you should definitely check out RxJS if you're into that, in that world. You should know what reactive extensions are by now. We don't have time to go over it again. But definitely read this blog post. Shout out to Matthew Podbasaki. He's the guy who writes RxJS.
Mm, yeah, Matthew's great.
Matthew's great.
Awesome. So next story is a tool called Snippetizer.
Mm-hmm.
So this is from the language experience team at Microsoft. Now, for people who aren't familiar with snippets, you're in Visual Studio in the code window. Rather than me needing to know the syntax for, say, a property,
mm-hmm.
I just type P-R-O-P and hit tab, and it'll build that for me. So it'll say basically public and give me the data type, so say like a string, I can start typing here, change the data type, hit tab, and change the name of the variable.
Okay.
If I want to do a full variable, like I could do prop full, and it'll do the full getter and setter.
Nice.
If I need to do a dependency property for WPF, I do prop DP, and it'll do all the weird things that you need for dependency properties and to work great in XAML. Great. So it's a lot of sort of boilerplate code. Hmm. People love snippets. Now, designing snippets is one of those things that can be a little difficult. It's, you know, it's not super crazy. It is a text file format. You can go in and change and customize your own. Like every time you do console write line, you can do CW mm-hmm. and have it kind of spit out the thing that you were going to do. This tool actually gives you, as you can see, we take a look at this real quick.
Mm-hmm.
We see that there's linked fields. Like I define a stopwatch, and I'm going to have a stopwatch snippet just to be able to show real quick the stuff I'm going to do. I'm going to do basically a start at the very top, and then a stop, and those words are changed. So as I change the stopwatch field, it'll change it in all places. I see the different areas where you can change the variable. There's ways to basically set properties, save it, ungroup the selection, and so on. So there's a lot of tools within here. Point is, if you're looking to build snippets, maybe you're building them for your team or for the community,
mm-hmm.
A must-have tool.
Excellent, man.
So porting Unity games, what is
excellent.
This?
Excellent. So not long ago, Unity announced that you can actually use Unity, which is game middleware, rather robust game middleware, in Windows 8.1. So in modern style apps that run in a sandbox, and for Windows Phone. So basically, this is really great content on Channel 9. To learn about how you port a Unity game to run in this new environment. And I think you'll be surprised to see it's not a ton of work. So big kudos to the Unity team for working to get this possible. So if you have a Unity game and you want to build an app to sell in the Windows Store or the Windows Phone Store, it's really not that hard to port it over. So watch this and learn, basically is all I can say. And again, kudos to you guys for spending the time. Actually took a fair amount of work.
Sure.
On Unity's part. So sure. Good job, guys and girls.
So inclusive.
Oh, man. So I thought we were done with Unity, man.
What? Hey, Charles, yeah. I'm an absolute beginner with this Unity thing. How do I get started?
So just like we talked about last week with DirectX, for people who don't know anything about DirectX or graphics programming, templates are available for people who don't know anything about Unity. Now, Unity is going to be a little bit different, of course, than DirectX. It's definitely not that low level. Again, it's middleware. So here are some Arctic Unity game kits. So they're game templates that'll get you started. If you've never used Unity before and you want to build a game, play around with this. Check it out.
Awesome. All right. So which brings us to Picks of the Week.
Yeah.
Picks of the Week, baby. All right. So my pick of the week is turning a building into a Rubik's Cube.
Excellent.
Building into a Rubik's Cube. So the idea here is there's both lights and an actual device. They're using open frameworks to basically do the
C++.
Code. C++. I know, C++.
I wanted to get that out there.
C++. Okay.
Because that's what I'm supposed to do, right?
C++. To code this, and I think the best way to show this is I'll actually jump out to the page and we'll see how. Come on, baby. Let's go. Give me 1 second and we'll show Larry's thing in just a second, but I'll see if I can. Give me a second here and we'll full screen. So check what this guy's doing. He's actually twirling that Rubik's Cube and
awesome.
It's changing how the building is colored. So, like, that is ever so epic.
That is really, really cool.
It's communicating via Bluetooth to be able to send the signal, so it kind of gives you, it does, you know, full rotation as you move around
nice.
To actually figure stuff out. This is...
It's pretty performant, actually, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. I think the command goes through once you click through.
Nice.
But this is just awesome.
That is really good. Really well done. I think the guy got a master's
thesis. I think he
thesis.
Won it, and that's the...
Nice job, man.
Javier Lore.
Good job, Javier.
Puzzle facade. You know, and while we're on the subject and while I'm here,
yes.
We want to show off Larry Larson did a great interview on Photosynth.
He did. That should, you know, you guys should watch that. It's on Channel 9. A bunch of people have, actually.
So Larry was just showing us this, which is, so this is, you know, his pages, and this is all touch-enabled, obviously. So I'm going to use, this
your
is called
finger.
The finger, and click in here.
Uh-huh.
And so this is actually a photo synth using a couple of photos.
Actually 12.
12?
For this particular one, yes.
Okay, so what you can see here is, you know, I can kind of move around. I can do all sorts of fun stuff here and move side to side.
Really
nice.
It's
like, oh, wow, look at that. I want to see who's that person at the door. Whoa!
It's Larry!
Whoa! And you get, like, just awesome, beautiful detail in terms of all of this stuff here. Like, this is so cool to be able to see that level of detail.
Totally.
Can we actually read that? Tickets.
Not yet.
30C Showtime.
Nice.
Too. That's awesome. I have these glasses that aren't even mine. makes everything blurry.
So it's a release. It's a preview release of the next version of PhotoSynth, which now enables 3D stitching, so you can essentially build really small movies.
It's amazing.
Think about it. It's incredible. Nice work to Blaze and company. Blaze hasn't been on Channel 9 in way too long.
And that also brings us to your pick of the week. So what is your pick of the week?
My pick of the week is pound, or whatever it is in Twitter world, hashtag five-word tech horrors. That was going around very virally yesterday. I'm sure many of you are aware of that. And I came up with one that was interesting. I know Dan and I will probably make up one on camera. But it's interesting. A lot of people did some fun things. So Google changed their search algorithm. Robert Scoble thinks this is cool. That's something that's always fun to talk to Robert. I did one, null is just an object. But of course, I used the wrong hashtag. I used hashtag five-word coding horrors. So that's probably why you didn't come into your search results. I also liked auto, 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 auto. Right? Okay, that's out. The shout out to Herb. Auto everywhere, man. What about you? Five words.
Charles Story is hosting today.
Perfect. That's definitely
a horror. Five-word tech horror.
Sorry, guys. That's why. And by the reason that I look like a hacker, kind of slash Unabomber, is that people are well aware that this week is Hour of Code, man.
Hour of Code. Sure.
You can learn to code. It's not hard. There's plenty of languages you can use that are way less complex than some of the, you know, industrial strength things we use to say stream video
and if you are a coder, it's really also about helping others learn how to code, do their first app.
You got it. And you know, you guys on Channel 9, I should say we, but you were definitely like really behind that, you and Golnus and company, and Clinty, the whole beginner series.
Absolutely.
Like, if you don't know how to code, go watch the Absolute Beginner series on Channel 9. You learn about for loops, data structures, etc. Basic things you need to understand.
Bob Tabor's great.
He is great. So, Hour of Code, write some code. Even if you don't know how to do it, do it.
Awesome. All right, well, thank you, Charles.
Thanks for having
me on
again.
Another outstanding show,
right,
and I'm sure we'll never see you again. Thanks, everyone.